Okay, and welcome back. It's a very interesting news on the chemtrail front, and possibly the Morgellons front as well. We are getting samples now from around the world, have been for quite some time, but the overlay of duplicity and almost identical or quite similar materials found in a sample from Texas and a sample in Italy, in the Venice, Italy area, are surprising, to put it mildly. And to get an update on that, we've invited back two of the premier experts in the world on chemtrails and certainly Morgellons, in the case of Dr. Hildegard Stanninger. Dr. Hilde has been with us many times over the last couple of years, I guess, now. She is the author of the international environmental bestseller, The Comprehensive Handbook of Hazardous Material Regulations, Monitoring, Handling, and Safety, Lewis Publishing Company, CRC Press. It's a big book. She presented groundbreaking information regarding Morgellons in October of 2006 at the annual conference of the National Registry of Environmental Professionals in papers regarding far infrared radiant heat type remediation for mold and other unique diseases and protecting yourself from electromagnetic fields in the home, workplace, and the environment. She's an amazing woman, but very glad to have her back on the program tonight. We're going to talk about many things in this next hour. Joining us once again is the amazing Dr. R. Michael Castle. Mike has been with us several times in the past as well. He is a certified environmental risk auditor, a polymer chemist, very active in chemtrails research since 1998. He is the president and CEO of Castle Concepts Incorporated, environmental consulting and engineering firm located in Ohio. He is a certified environmental risk auditor and as such conducts environmental phased assessments, due diligence for national lending institutions, industry, and environmental organizations as well. He is the author of the now widely publicized white paper on chemtrails, entitled The Methodic Demise of Natural Earth and its sister legislation, the Unified Atmospheric Preservation Act. Both documents available for you at rents.com. Let's say hello to Dr. Stanninger first. Hello, Hilde. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I enjoy being back, and especially with Dr. Castle.
He's a good man, and we're glad to have him back, too. All right, Mike, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, and good evening, Hilda. Good to see you again.
Same here.
Glad to be on the show, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay, what we have is more information, and we have followed this story for a long time. I guess, Mike, this whole chemtrail thing began quasi-officially, at least in terms of the Internet and people watching and noticing, around 96, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and really, it really dug in. In active operations, tracking back to 92.
Mm.
That's the Project Cloverleaf and all those spins from that.
Yeah, I actually saw chemtrails, some of the early prototypes. They were screwy X's and grids in the sky. Must have been, let me think, around 93, 94. And I didn't come on board, really, honestly, until about 98. I just, like a lot of people, I said, couldn't be. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing. And, Hilde, when did you first start getting involved with the chemtrail thing? We know about your magnificent work with the Morgellons. When did you first notice chemtrails?
When I first met Dr. Castle many years ago, when I was vice president with Dragon Environmental Corporation a long time ago.
Wow.
Around the same time, I think about 1998.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. So we have a story up there written by Dr. Stanninger, Ph.D. It is at the guest's data section. You can find it easily there. It's also on the first news block. Chemtrail samples from Texas as compared to samples from Venice, Italy, and a possible relationship to Morgellons. So let's have Hilde go first, since it's her paper. What's this all about?
Well, what this is about is I compared the original chemtrail sample that I got for Project FMM, which was from Texas, which looked like spiderweb-like structure, white, or a white cotton candy appearance. We sent it to the lab. We had analysis done under scanning electron microscope and also EDS. We then compared it to two individuals that were diagnosed by their doctors as having Morgellons, and one lived in, which was Anna, lived in Long Beach, California, and the other one which was Lily, lived in Signal Hill, California. Those analyses matched the chemtrail sample also in shape and appearance and the primary compounds in it. Then the next step was in the recent, around November 10th, I received a paper which was from Dr. Luca Zemingo from Italy. He was former with the University of Venice and also with the health department in Venice in relation to industrial hygiene and toxicology. And he took samples from a park in Venice and had similar results as what we were having over here as comparing it to the chemtrail samples, meaning these were white materials that were on the park area. And that's what this whole topic is. And Dr. Castle, being an expert in chemtrails, at the same time being a polymer chemist and knowing the analysis, can see possibly more than what the audience can see, but at the same time we can show
right.
the comparison here.
Right. Okay, Mike, now these things have been being sprayed on us for well over 10 years in earnest.
Oh, yes.
Have there been other efforts to compare and contrast and do overlays and analyses on a multi- or bicontinental basis, or is this kind of the first one that's really come together?
No, there have been other analyses, especially in Great Britain. And we've even received pictures from them, but and there's a few, I will say, possibly more silent embedded medical doctors and research, and they've came up with some very, very barium intoxication was one of them, and so these people that are over there. There is a effort, even in the country of Greece. We've been in communication with those people for quite some time. But no one ever really puts the two together as far as unifying this whole effort to identify these. But based on the, not so much smattering, but the observations that have been made internationally, they, in fact, are the same composition origin. Whether their fields of intention or purpose, in fact, are the same as we are discovering over here, not sure about that. But they, in fact, have the same exact identical chemical patterns, the usage of certain chemicals. And in the case of the nanodevices, which is what I believe, by the way, whether it's to conjecture if somebody's got a different opinion, I know they do. Well, I'll just table that for a moment because we've got the information that we, in fact, replicate itself and infest humans and develop a compound that I've just kind of trying to be cute to myself one night said, what the compound of this that it results from the nanotechnology is chaosinite. It forms chaos. I've never seen such chaos in my life that this formed.
Okay.
That's exactly the reports we're getting from overseas.
Right. All right. Now, when we talk about nanotechnology and nano this and nano that with respect to Morgellons, we're not talking, folks, about things we can see with the naked eye with a 10 or a 50 or a 100 or a 500 power microscope because nano, of course, is at the atomic level. But the results of some kind of nano device can certainly manifest themselves in ways that can be seen quite easily with low power microscopes. So we want to make that clear. We're not saying that we can see something at 10 power that is in fact an original nano device. It may be the end product if nano is involved. We don't know for sure. I think you both saw the TV news story recently where someone officially collected samples after heavy spraying. I think it was Alabama or Arkansas.
No, it was Arkansas.
Arkansas.
It was a very good presentation.
Yeah, and that was the first time in 10, 11 years that I remember seeing or hearing about an actual television newscast having the guts and the money to go out and do the proper journalistic research and come up with an analysis. Mike, and what was that analysis showing us in terms of barium in the air after heavy chemtrail spraying?
Well, no, And that was the beauty of what they, in fact, did broadcast, and the fact that they knew that it was six times the level. They contacted the poison control people. We heard their dissertation. But the analysis in this case here, because of I guess where they're located geographically, and they're situated, the barium is used in weather manipulation. That's one of the products of it. And actually, when it's spent and falls to the ground, that's called a hazardous toxic waste.
You bet.
So, you know, and I've got something to tell you later on about that particular comment.
Okay,
but,
all right.
What happened in Arkansas, I think, was right in the money.
Okay, stand by. I'll be back in just a minute. And for those who are trying to pass off chemtrails as military weather manipulation, are missing a much bigger picture here. That certainly may be part of the totality of the deployed technology, which is what it is, but there's a lot more going on. All right, back in just a minute with Dr. Castle, Dr. Staniger, as we continue this hour. Very important paper up by Dr. Hildegard Staniger, Ph.D. at Rents.com. Stand by, and we shall continue. Okay, back with Dr. Hildegard Staniger and Dr. Mike Castle, both PhDs. Mike, at this point in time, if I can from you, let's just get a quick, unless you want to make another comment about what you were alluding to prior to the break.
Well, there's always things that you leave out that you want to go back to. What I was saying about the, what you were talking about overseas analysis and is there overlays,
sure.
The lady on the other side of these phones over here is the premier leading edge of the most magnificent analytical side of determining specifically what these are. And to her credit, and as she mentioned, Dr. Domingo internationally has done some fine work. I mean, I'm just very impressed, and he becomes one of our comrades because we're all looking to do the same thing here.
Uh-huh.
So I want to give credit to and a lot of commentary to commend Hildy for all the absolutely great work she does. There's the Morgellons Research Group, and they're working with universities and independently, and this is just all absolutely positively stunning news. But we're on the trail. And one thing I wanted to mention before, Jeff, when I said about hazardous waste,
mm-hmm.
hazardous and toxic waste,
mm-hmm.
I recently, just in the past week, filed again with the federal EPA, right on their website, online, a complaint, if you will, but a report of violations to the federal EPA. They got sites you can do that. And I put down there exactly what I thought the violation was, what the contamination was, where it was coming from, and specifically our chemtrails and barium and heavy metals and Morgellons and the fibers, the nano devices. I put that all in there, and I sent it in to them. And you know what? I haven't got a response back, so I sent a reminder, and I want to know if they're going to refuse to respond. I want to know what their authority is to ignore this.
Yeah,
if we could get just a groundswell of people to do the same thing.
Well, this reminds me of Clifford Carnicom's effort to get the EPA to do its sworn job of analyzing samples, and it refused.
Right. And so I think we've got a good thing going with all the work that Hilda is doing and the other people that work with her. And especially our beloved Shoshana. Show, wake up. Are you up yet?
Well, you know, if Dr. Staniger and Shoshana and yourself weren't being paid so well, I don't know how you'd be able to spend the time to do this.
You're absolutely right on the money, Jeff.
It's remarkable. All right.
But we love our work.
Yes.
Well, it's the kind of currency that goes into the bank of the soul, which counts, and you're hopefully banking a lot of that because you're serving mankind, both of you.
We're working on platinum bars.
And the lady in Iowa, too. Listen, Mike, let me get from you quickly. We've got just a minute till the break. At this point in time, what about chemtrails and Morgellons, in your professional view, are similar or tied together?
They are positively linked together with absolutely no discussion or debate beyond that. There's just no question that a certain variety of the chemtrails, in fact, are heavily laden with the nanofibers, the nanotechnology, the nanodevices, heavily laden with it, and have been for a long, long time.
Okay, these are the fibers coming out of the lesions of people who have sores on their bodies and so forth.
That's
right.
What, yes, that's exactly what Hilda has found out in proof positive using various levels and of analyses.
Right. We'll get to you, Hilda, in just a second, so hang on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
They're similar enough in those cases that, yes, these are the same things.
Okay. Now, what Mike Castle is saying is if we were to collect samples after heavy spraying or light spraying and examine them, we're going to find the same kinds of fibers. And I remember Jan Smith in one of our early programs saying that 10 years ago she was taking Scotch tape with her and just putting it on windowsills when she'd go visit people, and she'd find the same fibers that she was pulling out of her body. So what we have in the human body now is some kind of an infestation apparently germinating from or being caused by, engendered by, the spray going on above our heads. And this is not just toxic fallout, but people have died from this, folks. Most of the deaths, of course, have been suicide, but we don't know if others haven't died, in fact, from complications of these fibers, which apparently infest not just the epidermis and the lower layers of the skin and flesh, but the deeper internal areas of the body. We think they go throughout the entire body. We know they have been found in the middle of joints, Jan Smith's knee operations, and other areas. Mike, do you think that, in your view, these do penetrate all organs and all areas of the bodies at will, so to speak?
Yes, I believe they have a self-mandated onboard program. That's why I believe this entire sequence of contamination of this earth and us and everything else is by an artificial intelligence. These are not just machines. They have an intelligence with them. So they're somewhat of an iBot, a robot.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, I mean, you have to wrap your mind around that. But I believe it's been with us for a long, long time, and it goes in certain phases.
I see. All right. Those phases and other aspects of Morgellons as engendered by chemtrails, potentially. We'll continue to talk about that next with Dr. Staniger as we continue. Do read the paper up there. It discusses the Texas chemtrail samples and the Venice, Italy park samples. And I think you'll find that to be fascinating. Back in just a couple minutes. Okay, and we're back with Dr. Castle and Dr. Staniger. All right, and by the way, there are two articles up there under Dr. Staniger and Dr. Castle in Guests. The first is the paper by Hilde, and the second is the paper detailing the spider web-like webs in Venice, Italy. Take a look at those. There are several PDFs to click on as well. Lots of interesting things. All right, Hilde, go ahead with your side of this, and it's difficult, as both of you know, for a lot of people to come to terms with the fact that we are being and have been poisoned. But as Alex Jones points out in his new video DVD, Endgame, there are over 20,000 experiments on the unwitting, unwilling, unknowing American public now that have been revealed, biological, chemical, you name it. So it's not a big surprise to those of us who are in this business, but go ahead, Hilde, please.
It's like all the games are being run at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
In any event, though, as Dr. Castle mentioned earlier, not only the scientific analysis or the chemical analysis that's being done with really high-tech equipment that's been out there a number of years, and even some new ones like the Raman that we've explained in the past. But the thing is that has been consistent from what I have found and also colleagues has been that it is basically from my end nanotechnology. And what we have been able to do, and especially in a new paper that Dr. Carju and I are writing, in reference to the skin samples, where we're matching the exact technology that is matching it with a nano. In reference to Dr. Luca Zamingo's work, he went an extra step, which was very nice, and I know Dr. Castle appreciates this as a chemist, because Dr. Domingo is a chemist, is that not only did he analyze his specimens once, but he did it twice to make sure that it was within the standard deviation,
mm-hmm.
which it went, which was, you know, the ballpark, meaning like 0.3 difference versus the normal 2%, okay? The importance of his data was that he saw these white spider-like filaments over the park, but there was a lot over that time. He immediately collected them, and within a reasonable amount of time, he was able to analyze it. Versus in my chemtrail sample that I received from the lady in Texas, and thank you, is where it was collected and it took time to get to me. You know, several months. It wasn't like it was a virgin material, but it wasn't, it was aged, okay?
Sure.
Versus his was immediately analysis. The interesting thing is that he went an extra step, which was very nice, is that he took a sample, and that's number C on his data, and that was of spider webs that were behind a sign so he could compare it. The interesting thing is on that spider web analysis that the analytes, the elements that were found in there, are elements that are very similar to what we have in our chemtrails and also in my Morgellon patients, meaning 7 of those elements out of 13 total were the same. The difference is that his analysis of carbon and oxygen was like 70% carbon, mm-hmm. and almost a little less than 30% oxygen, where ours, both on the Morgellons and also on the chemtrail, was like 47-47, 36-51, meaning they're higher amount of oxygen or carbon, okay?
Okay?
Or less carbon and more oxygen. And he found aluminum. And he also found aluminum in one of the spider webs versus one of the two of the other samples, where we found it in one of the Morgellon patients.
Do the spider webs look anything like the chemtrail filaments at all under high magnification? Now, we can look at both papers here, but for our folks who are not online.
Right. They look similar in appearance, and also meaning the stuff that was not spiderweb on our end looks exactly like, I would call it the virgin material before it ages.
Mm-hmm.
And why I say is it ages, if this material was coated by, say, a silica particle or some other particle, maybe even an iron oxide or any of this stuff, that it can form into something else as it's mixing with the bioterrain and using your body as the resource for the minerals. Because all of the stuff that we've observed with the Morgellons, it has a unique feature. It makes some kind of gel within the matrix of the cell, which is the water between, the fresh water between the cells. At the same time, it inhibits or interacts with the particular minerals that are associated with the enzyme superoxide dismutase, which is used to protect the whole cell.
Hmm.
And we're having other data that's not related to this, but where we're seeing a distinct relationship on how Hispanics get protected versus Caucasians do not. So it's all coming out hopefully before the end of the year, this information.
Are you suggesting an ethno-specific angle to Morgellons that we're not seeing?
I'll give you an example. Hispanic individuals have the highest amount of superoxide dismutase, which is used to protect the body, the cell from any neurotoxin,
okay.
Especially Hispanics that live at the equator or around the world because they have a thicker membrane. Everything grows thicker at the equator, okay, including skin grapes. There's more nutritional value, etc. But other nationalities or races have less superoxide dismutase in protection. At the same time, a majority of the people, are half the population, has been, I'm going to say, genetically defective in that they cannot have enough of the superoxide dismutase to come out that it can neutralize the neurotoxin, say like malathion or anything, and
mm-hmm.
thus they cannot make the oxides so that then they have more attack on the nervous system,
so the body uses, and people don't understand this, oxidation to actually destroy toxic materials.
Correct.
Oxidation in and of itself is not always bad. We've got this big thing about, oh, we've got to take antioxidants. Oxidation is a process by which the body destroys bacteria, works on viruses and other things. So oxidation in its place is fine. That's what ozone does in water to organic compounds. It oxidizes them and destroys them and purifies
Correct.
The water. So hang on. We'll be right back in just a minute. We continue our conversation here. Very quickly, Mike Castle, do we have any idea now, any guess about how many people have Morgellons? Let's just say in this country. Do we know?
I think a good figure to start at was well over 1 million.
Okay. Well, we'll agree with that.
And possibly exponentially up to 20 million.
Could be.
I mean,
hold on, Mike. Pause. But the point is there are a lot of people out there who have this that don't know what it is, and their dermatologist is probably the last place they want to go to try to find out, unfortunately. Be right back in just a few minutes. Okay, let's get right back to our conversation with Dr. Castle and Dr. Steininger. The issue of fungus being involved somehow with Morgellons is also on the table. There seem to be a lot of wide open spaces with this thing. We don't know how it spread. We suspect environmentally as an initial through chemtrails. But secondarily, do we have any solid evidence yet that this is a direct contact human-to-human thing? Or can someone's genetic and or immunological makeup prevent them from contracting this? We're all speculating here now. Let's be open about this. But what are your best guesses about these things?
Well, guesses would, in fact, fall well within the realm of being a statistical compilation of some sort. I do know that there are more than just one type of these devices, more than one species,
mm-hmm.
possibly some of them. And as long as we don't try to fit them all in one can,
good. That's what we don't want to do.
No,
now, you
we
just
don't
said
them
something.
All in one can.
You
different.
Just said right. You just said species. Now, if we're talking about something of a nanotech origin, we're talking about machines. Are we talking about types of machines? Are we talking about species?
Well, species, I guess we're going to invent the word a pseudo-life form, because
okay.
that's exactly what they are.
Exactly, I agree.
They're a pseudo-life form, and to comment about how many people upwards that could possibly have this, if you've seen, I don't want to steal Mr. Carnicom's thunder, Cliff's a good friend of mine, but Clifford Carnicom, in fact, had just done another great works also on the bloodborne capability of this particular, he calls them anomalies, but he has proven that this, in fact, does carry itself in through the human bloodstream. And that is, that should be a call for everybody to take a really close look at this, because there's all the evidence I need to know that, and of course, I guessed that before. That's the only way it does work.
Sure.
And there are many various types of machines that are there, or species, and some of them have fungal properties. They, in fact, utilize some of the processes they use to take chemicals from the body, our own bodies, and I'll just lump it at our, and they process these chemicals and are able to make other things from these by mm-hmm. that process of replication
mm-hmm.
and then continue to spread, if you will, infest, and we don't know where the end of that is. We don't know where that is. It's just that there is somebody that knows. Somebody out there knows
you bet there is.
How many people are infested with this.
Yeah.
It's not like a disease where you have to do a survey first. Somebody already knows what the impact of this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are collectively trying to find.
Is this, Dr. Steininger, is this affliction, this syndrome, it's apparently multifaceted. We all agree on that. It has the fibers, the colored fibers. It's got the golden rods. It's got the gristle-like formations, strange little gristly things.
Yeah, bundles, yeah.
Whatever, yeah. Are people who have this, do we know where, do we have a guess where it's all going? Are they just going to be chronically carrying this kind of thing? Or are they, because they're infested, are they ripening? Are they progressing? Does this reach a maximum limit as a successful parasite without destroying its host? What are our thoughts on this now? Again, we're going to the realm of speculation, but there are a lot of people with a lot of questions.
Right, and you hit on it just before the commercial, where there is a direct relationship between oxygen. If these materials were to use oxygen as they and also utilize within our body carbohydrates, there's a whole other category of polymers which are called carbohydrate plastics that can be utilized in this creation.
Hmm.
And I'm in the process of collecting samples from individuals. But the whole niche of it is that it affects anyone that's susceptible to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that have been healthy, or what we would call ourselves as, you know, eat organic, we have taken our vitamins, etc., may not get the symptoms or the result of it at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely from the air and from the environment, every one of us are exposed to it.
Not everyone is becoming afflicted at this point
correct.
In time.
And the ones that have experienced where the fibers are coming out of the skin, and you touched on in the very beginning, Jeff, was that these are so small, the particles, yes, when they originally start, but once they start building and use your body,
mm-hmm.
you can see them with the eye, or you can see them with a microscope,
oh, yeah.
or any of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does happen, and it's where it's internal, and it's we're finding more and more it's, with those three locations, which go into the intestine, the kidney, and also the upper respiratory.
Have we
area.
Been able to procure any tissue samples for analysis of people after operation? We know in the orthopedic sense we've had, yes, confirmation that they certainly are loaded in at least some people's joints. Do we have any tissues from deeper internal organs yet to confirm this? Although we do know they come out of every orifice in the body, they're in body fluids, so we have every reason to believe that they are, in fact, spreading and have spread in many cases throughout
yes.
the body of the victim.
New data that we're in the process, we've just received the photographs, and Dr. Carju and I have putting together. We have it exactly on the skin surface, and it also shows what happens with the skin as the material comes in, meaning
mm-hmm.
that the skin is coated. We had specimens from an individual in Georgia versus in California, and also one in the northern part of California. Same reaction, same compounds, different locations, and these ladies do not know each other.
I see. Mike Castle, bottom line, nowhere to hide. They're spraying the hell out of us on many continents. And
not only ourselves, excuse me for interrupting,
yeah,
but
sure.
also our food, our environment. And
oh, yeah.
Even if it's organic out there, if it's
doesn't
in
matter.
The air, we've got a problem, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, it's
literally... It's a direct environmental problem.
It is fouling the entire surface of the planet, and
even
maybe
your
even
your cockatoo is getting coated.
That's right.
Everything.
All right, well, let me ask you, Mike, about this issue of a progression in the body. What are your thoughts? They enter through the skin, they proliferate, and obviously cause neurological problems in some people. They cause a lot of, there's a bag of problems that are apparently related to this affliction. Where is it going?
Well, okay, Jeff,
in the body?
And I touched on this in an earlier conversation with Hilda on the
We have just about 3 minutes, Mike.
Okay. And what I've stopped dancing around these tulips because I know exactly where this is going to go. And again, this is just my opinion, but there's only one place it can go, and that's to a form of ultra mind control in human beings.
These are also receptacle devices for energy and informational purposes.
We've got their picture. They're nano arrays.
Mm-hmm.
They use some type, I believe, a scalar telemetry, both receive and transmit. And we don't really know that realm, but we do know that it changes the personality in some of the older patients, if you will, that's had this 12, 15 years in some of the discussions they and some of the things they put on the on their sites. And they've had it for, it's very mature, if you will. And they've noted that there have been all kinds of personality changes, not including the chaotic side of this, where this seems to manifest itself and ruin people's lives. I mean, they just, I've heard some of those worst stories of people who have this and what happened to them. And as was said before, trying to pick themselves up and get a little bit of credibility, because nobody will believe them. They're crazy.
Well, as Cliff,
nobody listening.
No.
And that's the only point that I keep trying to make, Jeff, is
that's
they would
right.
just wake up to this.
Yeah.
They would
the
just
change,
wake up to that.
The changes in, I remember what Cliff Mickelson said. He said, Morgellons changes everyone's personality, and if they have negative, so-called negative attributes, those for some reason become far worse. And he said it'll ruin every relationship. Morgellons destroys relationships because of the effects it has on the person's personality, their psyche, their outlook, their thought processes, and all the rest of it. Would you concur with that?
Yes,
Cliff?
I would. Certainly, absolutely. It does, in fact, there's going to be a baseline of everybody having either dementia or Alzheimer's. One of the two. There's going to be a fine line there eventually. But then again, if there's nobody normal left,
who's going to know?
We'll all have the same thing.
That's right.
But there's a lady that's going to be on the road, and this is going to go to some congressmen and some senators, and all the stuff we've got, and I'm making direct calls via the internet to some of these eloquent professors out there that yak a lot about nanotechnology, the journal of Nature Nano, and my appeal is to them to jump in here and let us ask you a few questions.
You bet. Let's put yourself at our disposal for a while.
Yeah, these are the designers and developers of some of this.
Right. Mike Castle, thank you for being here, as always. We'll talk again soon. Thank you. And Hildy, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Last quick question, Hildy, real quickly. The psychological, mental aspect of this may be the most insidious of all. No one seems to escape it. Would you concur with that?
Yes. At the same time, these materials that go into the body, because they're so small, any type of biological flora that's in the body, even if you had a fungal...
yeah, we have to run.
And any of that, it will grow from that. Okay?
I see. Thank you, dear. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.